You're up.
Hey, folks, thanks for tuning into the Banff Podcast. I'm your host, Mike Lafferty. I'm your animated host, Mike Lafferty, which is my first cheesy joke of the evening, because we're going to talk about cartoons today. And sometimes those long droughts you get between good superhero movies, oftentimes the best entertainment you're going to get outside of the books themselves is animation. There have been some great Batman, Superman, and Justice League cartoons, and we're going to talk about, you know, people's favorites, people's least favorites, and what's happening right now. And just to jump in and make things spicy, we got Chuck Rice here. And Chuck, you had a kind of a interesting opinion about Batman the Red Hood. What was that?
Batman the Red Hood is the best Batman movie.
Including the Christopher Nolan films.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, perhaps especially the Christopher Nolan films, because I think one of those is okay.
All right, you're going to have to explain yourself, because I watched Batman the Red Hood, and I thought it was just all right. Help me out here. Where's all the Red Hood love coming from?
Well, okay, you've got the Joker actually being scary and showing kind of the aftermath of what he did to Jason Todd. Although I suppose technically we could say that all the assholes who called that 1-800 number are actually the people who killed Jason Todd, but that's a separate issue, I suppose. And I think it's the best take on the Joker. He's actually funny in that movie, even though he's still a murderous psychopath. Like, there's the funniest scene he has in the movie is a scene where he kills a guy. A mob boss busts him out of Arkham and basically wants to use him to distract Jason Todd. And he shoots one of his guys, and then he says, "Okay, I'm gonna need a really big truck and a bunch of guys. Not that guy though, he's dead." And it's just, he's funny even at the same time. And then of course at the end, he has a bomb, and Batman goes to try and throw the bomb out the window, and he tackles Batman and yells, "It's better this way." Like, he wants to die with Batman. And I don't know. I think it's the closest I've seen kind of to the Alan Moore Batman. So yeah, I don't know. I really love that movie. I watch it all the time.
What do you think was your best part? I really like the alley fight.
Oh yeah, it's got a lot of great fights in it. I like the idea that you know, I guess it's kind of a Winter Soldier notion. Like, you can tell Batman wants to save him to a certain extent. Yeah, I don't know. It's really I think a perfect kind of self-contained Batman movie. With no origin, by the way. I really am looking forward to getting to see Batman's origin yet again in the Affleck movie, because no one can leave it alone for some reason.
Do we have to do that again?
I mean, they feel like they do.
That's like the new Spider-Man movie coming in. They're probably going to do part of an origin again, and it's just like, I could do without that.
Yeah, we know where he came from, guys. We don't need to kill Uncle Ben again. he died enough for our sins, okay?
You know, you're sort of in a damned if you're, I mean, there's just sort of no good reason to do an origin story anymore, unless you're doing an obscure character, because if you're doing one that's been done 100 times, your audience wants to give this Monty Python-esque, "Get on with it!"
Yeah.
And then if you change the origin, oh, then you've really screwed up. I mean, does anybody want to see a gritty reimagined origin for any of these characters? No, thank you. Just get to the action, please.
You know, I disagree with all you guys. I can never get tired of seeing those pearls hit the concrete.
neither can Zack Snyder.
Did any of you ever see Comic Girl 19's take on the whole pearls thing?
No, what's that?
Basically, she used to work in a jewelry store, so she was talking about how real pearls don't have that string through them that would cause it to, like, the way the string is done, they wouldn't fall apart like that. So every time they're showing the pearls fall apart like that, they're indicating that Thomas Wayne was a cheap bastard who actually bought his wife shitty pearls.
I watched the pearl making episode, yes. In regards to origin stories, I do generally agree that as fans we know these stories, but not necessarily everyone in the general audience does. However, I think one of the best things to have happened in one of the most hated movies, The Incredible Hulk, was they did the entire origin story as background during the opening credits.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, and it was cut as an homage to the 70s TV series. That's another touch that I
like. Yeah, exactly.
I love them doing that. It told you everything you needed to know, and then they got to the monkey.
Well, what is it? In the first issue of the Hawkeye ongoing that Matt Fraction wrote, he has like three sentences on the first page. It's something like, he was the greatest archer in the world. He joined the Avengers. That's all you need to know.
Yeah.
Well, you know, Roman Ellis was doing the same thing in when he was writing in Moon Knight. Just you know, he gives the entire setup in like a paragraph, and then boom, we're off to the show. And you know what I didn't do, speaking of after the show, I didn't introduce anybody except for Chuck Rice. So joining us
Who else do you need?
Well, that's true. If you get Chuck, it's having Tom Cruise in a movie. It's gonna put some in the seat. We have Andrew.
I don't know that I've been complimented here, actually. Tom Cruise.
Andrew Collis is joining us. How you doing, Andrew?
Hi, what's up, guys? Long time no see.
Good to have you. Andrew is the writer of Heroic Comics.
Zenith Comics Heroic, yes, sir.
Sorry.
I love those comics.
Thank you. I like writing them.
That was Jacob Blackman of Rogue Genius Games and various other gaming companies.
Hello.
Walt Billiard of Hazard Studios is here. Chris McLaughlin of Green Ronin fame is here as well.
Yes, indeed. And soon to be other fame as well, I hope.
Yeah, you're doing a top secret project that I wasn't going to ask you about.
I can't wait to talk about it, but you know, just you sometimes you go to Gen Con with no expectations and you walk out doing your dream project and your co-writer is the guy that you've literally wanted to work with for 17 years and it's finally happened. So I can't wait to start spouting about this one.
Does that mean you're going to be writing Squidbillies, the RPG?
Oh my goodness!
No. I'm too close to that material. I'm one of those people that enjoys that show because I can recognize specific relatives and guys I went to high school with. So, I think I need somebody a little more distance, maybe, to break it down into game terms.
All right, that was better than the Thomas Magnum joke I was going to make, Walt. So thank you.
I listen.
Yeah, and, Abe Smith. Is here. Aide, who does work with Green Ronin and Painting Goat Studios and all kinds of people. Welcome, Aide. Good to have you.
Hello there.
And while Aide doesn't like movies, he does like comic books and cartoons. So
that is correct.
Yeah.
It's a miracle, but yes, it's true.
Oh, hey, that reminds me. Occasionally we use this podcast to mention, you know, gaming products, and Fading Goat Games just released Envision a Villain, which is a product. If you're using Fate to play your superheroes game, this is written by Ross Payton of Base Raiders fame, along with A.P. Klosky of Cold Steel Wardens, and Brian Hitchcock helped me out. And it's a short PDF of advice for doing supervillains in Fate Core. So
nice.
Excellent compliment to your you know, Venture City game. So check it out now, unless you suck and then don't. But
well, now that you put it that way, geez.
Am I a hell of a salesman or what? I can't.
Yeah, really. I don't know.
Check it out or go get fucked. Yeah, yeah.
Buy this product or you're a fucking commie.
I should mention that Chuck is now a full-time marketer for Mayfair Games.
Often in exactly the words that you've heard just now, just not usually, you know, in public.
Are you thick or something, fucker? Buy this game. What the fuck? All right. So let's talk about bad cartoons.
Or bad ones.
Bad ones. Because we got a whole list of great cartoons we can talk about. But, you know, there were a lot of bad superhero cartoons, and I'm just going to go out there with one that I know is near and dear to Christopher McLaughlin. Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends.
What was bad about that one?
It was bad. There was a chill that just went through the room on that one.
Yeah, that's great. Really? That's the one that established Australian accent Wolverine, man. Come on.
Well, okay. All right. Look, I defy anybody in 1982 to get a to actually get a better superhero show on the air.
All right.
Well, okay. What year?
82 is when that's when I have my strongest memory of watching it. I mean, it's definitely something I would not have caught if it had been after I'd gotten a driver's license. I freely admit that. You know.
Look, I got to say, all you need to know about Spider-Man and its amazing friends is that it gave us Firestar. Now, how you feel about that, I think says a lot about you as a person, and I'll just leave it at that.
Okay. You know, Firestar for me is one of those characters where it's like Rogue or like Storm. It's like, she's awesome, but the douchetards they keep hooking them up with as their boyfriends in the comics. I'm like, really? Really?
Justice wasn't so bad.
Oh, come on. Vance Astrovic, please.
Now, one of the things you do have to admit that was actually pretty good about Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends is it wasn't just all about the three main characters. They actually introduced most of the greater Marvel Universe over yes. the course of the show.
Yes.
You know, they went on adventures with the X-Men and with the yeah. Fantastic Four and, yeah. you know.
All right, there's a good Captain America and Red Skull episode.
Yeah, it was, yeah.
The 1967 Spider-Man, though.
Now, that's the best.
Really?
That's
67 Spider-Man is the gold standard. Come on.
67 is the animated comic one, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. I quite like those. I do have a fondness for those, I must say.
There was a great period in that one's history where Ralph Bakshi got put in charge of both It and Rocket Robin Hood at the same time, and the episodes became interchangeable. They just would replace Rocket Robin Hood with Spider-Man. It would be the same villain, the same animation, same everything. Was great.
Speaking of similarities, I think one of the things that was most funny about Spider-Man, especially all the early Spider-Man cartoons, is how often they started with the Lizard as the first villain they introduced.
That is true.
Well, all right-thinking people know that the Lizard is awesome. I mean, right?
I want to turn everyone into lizards. That's my goal.
He's ten times better than Green Goblin.
No, wait. 67 Vulture steals a rocket because a man with wings can do anything. A man with a rocket can do everything. It's like, what?
Well, listen, I shelled out the bucks to get those swanky color reprints that Marvel is doing, the Epic collections. Mm-hmm. And I've now got the fat colored reprints of like all of the Lee and Ditko Spider-Man. Those like first 40 issues or however many that Ditko lasted. Yeah. And I have a rule that you cannot go wrong with anything in those 40 issues of comic book, those first 40 issues of Spider-Man. And the Lizard is in there, so that makes the Lizard a great character. I mean, any creative period where you can make something like the Enforcers cool. I mean, that should totally not work. But my God, if they give Fancy Dan a solo title, I'd check that out just because that's such a, you know, I'm a little guy, I'm Fancy Dan, I kick you in the face. There you go. That's comics for me. So, yeah.
Fancy Dan was recently in Squirrel Girl, which I know none of you guys are reading, but I should.
Oh, wow. God. God bless him. So, yeah, I mean, Lizards in those first 40 issues, you can't go wrong with that. You just can't.
My friendly local comic shop actually has the comic that is the first appearance of Squirrel Girl. So, you got it up in the wall. Times.
Yeah, you ever feel like the DC guy in the Marvel room? How you doing, guys? How's it going? Wow.
Well, actually, Andrew, I have to tell you, I've been listening to a couple of other podcasts. And,
what? No!
It happens. It happens.
And slut.
They've been covering Rebirth.
Oh, have they? Tell me about that, Walt.
I've actually been picking up some DC titles.
Good, isn't it, Walt? Good.
It started with Mike getting me hooked on Aquaman, and then I've gone Batman, and now I'm in like 100 a month deep on
DC titles. In like 9 months, they're going to reboot the universe.
Of course, naturally. This is right at the moment that I like it again.
Well, I mean, a very short-term relationship for you.
Well, Aquaman, that's our guy, right? That's
Abnett.
Yes, Dan Abnett. That's our guy. We got to be reading that.
Oh, it's really good.
And it's a good Aquaman book, which is so rare. You really got to appreciate it while it's around.
Yeah, 39 months, and then they're going to kill him, like, with toxic waste, and he's going to be a teenage girl when they reboot the universe.
No, DC, not Marvel, guys. DC.
No, sadly, I think I could apply that to either comic company.
But come on, listen, we're talking about cartoons.
Kidding aside, look, I mean, you look at the sales right now. DC has gone back to their original characters, and they're just cleaning Marvel's clock. I mean, for whatever else Marvel has done with trying to diversify their line, they're getting killed in the sales market.
It's the writers. Look at the names on the Marvel comics now. They're nobodies. They're people you've never even heard of. All the name writers are going to DC and Image now, because at least they're getting to write stuff they want to write, not having Disney executives tell them what to write, which is kind of interesting, I think.
The Mark Waid Avengers has been a lot of fun, and that's except for Spider-Man. That's all. Spider-Man, Sam Wilson as Captain America, and Iron Man's in there, but everyone else has a different take on a classic character. And it's great. He's also writing Defenders, which is sort of the young hero book. But
by the way, the greatest moment in Spider-Man and his amazing friends was when Dan Slott killed them in Spider-Verse.
That was terrible.
Killed all three of them. Horrible. No. It was a beautiful, beautiful thing.
Hey, speaking of young heroes and angst, Jacob, what's that favorite cartoon of yours that's coming back?
Oh, you're talking about the Young Justice. Young Justice Season 3 is finally coming back.
Damn,
after years and years of us gnashing and wailing and wanting a Season 3, we finally get that coming. I'm so happy about that. Because, you know, I've been a fan of Greg Weisman's cartoons since I first started watching Gargoyles, Disney Gargoyles. And that was going back. Great show.
Gargoyles is amazing.
And then when he did Spectacular Spider-Man, you know, I was hooked. And then that show went away. And then we got Young Justice, and it was like, Greg's on this? I'm watching that. I'm so happy that we're finally getting a third season.
So this is going to be a Netflix exclusive, right?
I'm sorry, say again?
Netflix exclusively?
I have yet to hear what channel it's going to be on. I would love for it to be on Netflix, because then we can binge the hell out of it. But all I know is it is not going to be on Cartoon Network. That is the only thing for certain.
And we won't have to deal with that weird release schedule they had the first season.
God, yeah. Whereas, you know, a delay for 6 weeks, and then, you know, they immediately transition from season one to season two in less than a week. And they change the title of it so your DVR doesn't get it.
You know, it almost sounds like they didn't want it to succeed. Oh.
But yeah, if you want to keep up with Young Justice news, I recommend going to the Whelmed Young Justice Files podcast. That's on crashingthemode.com. A friend of mine, Rich Howard, does that, and it's a great show.
And we should mention that frequent podcast guest Steve Kenson has been on there occasionally talking about the Young Justice. So,
oh yeah,
go check it out. It's good stuff.
Who's seen Justice League Dark yet?
I have not seen that yet. I'm waiting for the DVD to come out. Then I will watch that.
It's pretty skippy.
Is it really? Like, yeah. Did they actually get Constantine right?
Oh, yeah. It's really, like, I was actually surprised at how good a job they did in the end.
And the other question I had, does Batman being there make sense?
You know what? It's really kind of fun because they just, without spoiling it for anybody, they really kind of drive home the point that this isn't Batman's world and Batman doesn't have the solution for everything, which was really refreshing to see for once.
I would agree, because that's kind of the problem with that character is Batman always knows what to do.
Oh, he's the ultimate overwritten character, please.
Yeah.
They kind of touched on that when they did the Teen Titans versus Justice League animated.
Which movie. I liked.
Which was really good, yeah. It was very good.
Because, you know, the Justice League were totally out of their element. They had no idea how to deal with a demon.
Well, exactly. And I got to say, I really liked the Raven-Damian Wayne thing. I thought that was really, like, well done.
Yeah, as much as I hate the little punk,
be gone. I love Damien.
He was rewritten to have to learn the same lesson in the past three movies. The movie he's introduced, he's told, you know, justice, not vengeance. Then the next movie, he has to relearn that lesson again. Justice, not vengeance. Then the next movie, he has to learn that again. Yeah. And then when you get to the fourth movie he's in, he has to learn it again.
Yeah, right, he just wants to kill bad guys.
Yes, it's a foundation of who he is as a person, and that's what I like about it. It makes him more believable. He doesn't just learn his lesson and go, well, thanks a lot there, Big Bob. I learned my lesson.
He
keeps slipping. Sorry?
Like how Tom Brady keeps getting caught cheating.
Am I right? And keeps winning.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Damien Wayne doesn't lose.
By any means necessary.
If you're raised by the League of Assassins, it's going to take more than a couple of tries to break your assassin nature. I'm sorry. It just doesn't.
Talking about Tom Brady?
Yes.
Tom Brady, raised by League of Assassins.
He was. And thank goodness there's a Lazarus Pit.
Yeah, it's the Lazarus Pit. That's how he's still so good.
We'll see how this goes if they continue the trend with the Judas contract.
Look, not very many people know Tom Brady's died like four times.
I'm looking forward to this contract, and after seeing Justice League Dark, I have a lot of faith that they're going to do it well.
And that brings me to Justice League Action. I'm sorry, go ahead, Chris.
Oh, excuse me.
Did someone say League Action? What was that? Yeah.
No, I was enjoying it for what it was, kind of like the original Clone Wars, where those little 5-minute snippets of action. You know, these little short 15-minute, bursts with a little clever dialogue and some action, and, doesn't get bogged down. But, they had John Constantine in one of the first episodes. I mentioned this before the show, and they had this bit where he had a very thick British accent doing really hilarious British slang that no one understood. And they'd look at Batman whenever John Constantine talked, and Batman was like, he got hit by an accent enhancement spell. Here's what he meant to say. And it was a pretty funny bit. But
I've only seen two. At the moment, I've only seen the Plastic Man episode with Brainiac and the Halloween one where they all turned into kids.
So you're not digging it?
No, actually, no. It's not in the It's on like ridiculous time slots. Once a week at 8 in the morning on Saturday, and then the next Saturday for some reason it's not there, and you just think, well, what happened to that? So.
Have you heard of this thing called the internet, Aid? It's this wonderful new invention that came along a few years ago.
I don't do internet. I don't know what it is. But yeah, no, it's good. I thought they were good. I thought they were really good. The Plastic Man one was very good, Plastic Man. And the Halloween one, actually, it was the first one I saw, and actually, it wasn't too bad. I wasn't massively enamored by the art style when it first started, but once you start watching the animation, it's actually pretty cool. So, cool. Not as good as the animated movies, but it's for something that's a DC show.
Keeping it basic. I mean, it's a Cartoon Network show. They want to sell toys.
Exactly. Yeah, they are toy designs. Exactly. Yeah.
It's too kiddy for me.
Well, yeah. I mean, you might not be the target demographic for this one. Which kind
I'm
of
really not.
DC Superhero Girls. I've heard it's good, but I haven't been watching because I figured I wasn't the target demo for that either.
So. Well, this whole question of ages reminds me of an article that I read a few years ago. It was back when Cartoon Network was showing, I think they were in sort of the last phases of Justice League Unlimited. They were also showing Teen Titans, and they were showing the Crypto Show. And they said this is part of a calculated strategy. You know, we want to hook like the little kids, the preschoolers and the elementary school kids on Crypto, and then they get a little older. We want them watching Teen Titans, and then later on in their lives, we want them to respond to Justice League. And I thought that was brilliant. I mean, I thought put on something that's your properties, your superheroes, but it's designed to hook every single age level that could possibly be watching Cartoon Network.
Yeah, that is smart. And Teen Titans Go, I think a lot of people hate it, but I really enjoy it for being goofy and campy.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, I'm definitely not the age group for Crypto, but I appreciate it. I appreciated it for what it was.
Yeah. And maybe we should, does anyone on here like Teen Titans Go besides me?
I like Teen Titans Go. I preferred the first version of Teen Titans Go than the current version, but the current version isn't terrible.
It's fun. It's something I can actually watch with my niece and nephew.
Yeah.
And sit there and giggle with them.
Yeah.
Because I really have no concept for those characters. So, you know, I can watch it for what it is.
Wait, Walt, wait. You've just made my must get Christmas gift for next year. It's a video of you giggling with children.
I need
to see this.
I am working my way into it.
Mm-hmm.
I think the only thing I've really enjoyed from Teen Titans Go was the episode where they got Weird Al Yankovic to do the voice for Darkseid.
What?
Yeah.
You just explained why Teen Titans Go is amazing. Look, it's not always my thing either, and it's more about the joke, and I would prefer the actual Teen Titans show that we had before, but if there's one thing life has taught me, it's to settle for what I can get, and that's Ooh. Teen Titans Go. So,
and the thing is, we don't have to settle. The point, the Teen Titans Go is not intended for all the audience. They specifically created Teen Titans Go for a younger audience. That is what it's intended for. They want to get the kids to do, you know, Teen Titans Go, and then when they get older, they can enjoy some of the other shows like Young Justice.
Yeah, it's very important we never lose sight of that. I mean, if everything superhero related is aimed for 48-year-old guys, there's not, you know, it's something that's going to disappear in a generation.
Can I posit though that there's a market between those two markets that's just not being addressed at all right now, and that's my problem with it. It's that we're either doing stuff for our age category of, you know, we don't want to see the origin story again. We want to see new, exciting, and darker and more mature stories, or it's complete kiddie, campy, silver agey stuff. But in between that lives a bronze age of no one's doing it, and it would be so nice to see it. That's the stuff we liked when we were young. That was the Gargoyles. That was the God, what else? I'm trying to think. What else was in that grouping for us in those days? Well, I'm coming up blank.
Batman the Animated Series.
Batman the Animated Series. The Justice League Unlimited and Justice League series. That's the thing I'm pining for, that lost middle ground. Avengers Assemble is terrible, but Avengers Earth Mightiest Heroes was perfectly in that vein.
I am right with you. Yeah. Yes.
And that's why I want Young Justice back, because Young Justice is right there. It's right in that place I love.
Now, there is news that they are getting rid of the current batch of Marvel cartoons, and they are doing an all-new Spider-Man cartoon. They have hinted at some of the people who are going to be involved with it, and from the sound of it, it's going to be kind of along the same vein as the Spectacular Spider-Man, which was in that vein you're talking of. So if they manage to hit that niche, I will be all about it, because I can't stand the current batch of Marvel cartoons.
Is this new one though? The one with Miles Morales and Gwen? Is that the three? Because I heard they were doing a triple with Peter, Miles, and Gwen as the three characters. That's what I heard.
That'd be kind of cool, actually.
But you know.
Because I want to see Spider-Gwen date both of them, break both their hearts. That's what I want to see.
And then get thrown off a bridge.
And then land a perfect superhero landing with Deadpool clapping her on the side. Perfect. Love this guy. Let's write it now. Let's go.
So hard on the knees. So, like, we were talking earlier about Batman. Batman the Animated Series. I apologize if you guys hear some rattling. Loki is about. We were talking about Batman the Animated Series, and for the time that was really groundbreaking, especially talking about a cartoon in America that spawned a two-hour movie that was actually seen in theaters.
Yeah, and I actually have to posit that Mask of the Phantasm was a better movie than Under the Red Hood.
Oh, that was a better movie. Batman Begins and Dark Knight Rises, and
so. But we have those movies, and then even before that, those cartoons, and even before that, we had Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends. Now, in both those instances, we had characters that were spawned for the cartoons and then made their way into the comics.
Oh yeah.
What do you guys think about stuff like that?
Good. If they're good characters, they deserve to be in the comics.
Absolutely.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's, you know, the like Harley Quinn. I mean, who can imagine Batman's Rogues Gallery without Harley Quinn now?
But dear Lord, I hate what they've done with Harley Quinn lately. But
that's exactly what I was going to say. But apart from that, apart from Harley Quinn being a complete mess up of a character at the moment, that's fine. Yeah.
Is this our periodic reminder of the clown car joke?
Yes.
Okay. The clown car joke. What?
Yeah. I think it was Jason Tondreau that brought this up. I apologize, Jason, if it wasn't you, but somebody had read one of the first Suicide Squad issues they released right after the new 52, or as I like to call it, the new 92, when they decided what we really wanted was for DC to be Image from the early 90s. And apparently there's some scene where Harley Quinn is coming on to somebody, I think Deadshot, and she makes this reference to her vagina being like a clown car.
No,
this is why New 52 was a complete mess. I'm sorry. There was some good stuff, Court of Owls, stuff like that. There were some good moments within it, but overall, just a complete mess.
And I would agree. But hey, let's talk about Hanna-Barbera. Huh? How's that
for sure? Okay, you are talking to the biggest fan of the original Birdman and the Galaxy Trio right here, my friends.
Wow.
And I am not joking.
Those were some fun cartoons.
They were awesome.
Are you digging Future Quest?
I'm scared of it. I'm scared of it.
Okay, man. Please trust me. Read it's really Future good. Quest. Please read Future Quest. It is amazingly good. Really?
The DC reboot comic? Is that what that is?
Yeah. Don't bother with that.
It's Birdman, Galaxy Trio, Blue Falcon. Who else?
Space Ghost.
Yeah.
Johnny Quest.
Yeah.
The big robot guy. The guy who's kind of Thor, but he's
Giganta.
Frankenstein Jr.
Yeah.
Oh my God! Really?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
It is really good. It's really good.
I'll give the first issue a try.
I mean, as these things go, it could have been a lot worse.
Okay,
what was something we wanted to make sure we mentioned? Look at our list. Okay, we want to talk about Thundar and Space Ghost. It talks, you know, Hanna-Barbera is kind of neglected supers universe. So what did you guys think about Space Ghost?
I never got into it.
Oh, I love Space Ghost. I don't know how many I saw, because in the UK we never get anything unless it was like 17 years after the original event. What I saw of it was fantastic. Yeah, a massive Space Ghost fan.
So Space Ghost went off the air like last
about 3 years ago. Yeah,
in Britain. Yeah.
But, and World War II rationing just ended last week.
That's right. Class, exactly. Okay? Yeah, and but I believe you have something called baseball as well. Yeah.
Have you heard of this new country, America? By the way,
yeah, it's I've heard it's all all fields.
It's all the now. Rage with the kids.
But yeah, no, Space Ghost was really cool. I don't know. I can't say I kind of vaguely remember little bits about it, but I know it was a character that always stuck with me. That every time DC kind of wheeled out a new Space Ghost series, it's something I'd always pick up. Yeah, so which is the prime reason I bought Future Quest, because it had Space Ghost in it. So now I want a Space Ghost solo series. So
I kind of describe it as being a Green Lantern fan prior to the last couple decades. Well, for the last 15 years or so, where Green Lantern got good. But, like, I've always wanted a really good Space Ghost comic book or cartoon, and you can kind of see the potential there. But you look back to, you know, most of what you got is sort of cheesy.
I was a Space Ghost Coast to Coast fan. That's what I liked.
But that's kind of like the Batman 66 of Space Ghost. Oh,
Now, do you think those cartoons, you know, with the way they were written back then and you know, some of the situations they ended up in, do you think that...
Let me interrupt for just 1 second.
The Batman
66 movie that just came out.
The animated, what was it,
Return of the Cape Crusaders.
There we go. Yep.
And a sequel was already in the works. I'm playing. Oh.
That was surprisingly interesting.
Yep.
Has anyone seen that?
Yeah, I saw the clip. I bought it.
I've seen clips for it. That's something I'm going to make time for now that I'm finally done working on Rogues Gallery and can like watch more stuff again.
Okay.
Yeah, they had some good stuff in there. They were throwing homages to various different generations of Batman and showing the differences of, you know, this is a brighter Batman, but here's what it's like when the brighter Batman suddenly becomes the grim, darkety dark Batman. And that was an interesting take on it, and I liked. There's this one scene where he gets hit over the head and he sees three Catwomen in front of him, and they're all the different Catwomen from the 66 show.
Hey, And have you guys heard the hook for the sequel?
No.
It's gonna feature Two-Face voiced by William Shatner.
Oh my.
No.
Oh,
God. okay, so who watched South Park this season?
I did.
I saw it.
Okay, we are eating member berries, right? We all get this now. Like, it's getting a little out of control. Yeah. Like, just a little bit. I'm a little sick of the nostalgia. Like, when I heard the clips for Batman 66, the animated, all I could think to myself on the first clip was, wow, they sound old. Like, they just, their voices sound like two old men. You know what I mean? Like, it's not.
It's pretty apparent, yeah.
Yeah, and that was so off-putting to me because it was just clearly just a nostalgia cash-in as opposed to something that needed to be done or a story that had to be told. Maybe I'm in the minority. That's fine. I'm used to being in that place. But
I am genuinely in agreement with that sentiment. But as somebody that was raised on Batman 66 and loved Batman 66, the original show didn't last that long. You had the one movie, and then that's all of that you ever got. And I think, you know, I mean, it had such a relatively brief life compared to, you know, the one Law and Order SUV or whatever it is. They're on like season 85 or something like that.
Or The Simpsons. You know,
God, I would still watch Law and Order SUV.
Okay. And if that's your thing, I'm not knocking it. I'm not knocking it if that's your thing. It's just,
bum, bum.
Okay. But, you know, but I mean, if you look at like what Jeff Parker did with the Batman 66 comic, to me, that take on the Batman is something that still had life in it, especially if you go the animated route where you solve the big limitation the original TV show had, and that was budget.
Yeah.
See, that's the thing.
Hang on. Let me.
I don't like the animated in the comic because I like it when the Batman story is in the original TV series, effectively three big rooms.
Yeah.
That was it.
Yeah. Also, let me.
You know, I mean, if people say to me, well, I'm not all that excited about a new Star Trek show, hey, believe me, I get it. I mean, there's been plenty of Star Trek done. But, you know, if you want to go back and revisit something that had a short lifespan like Batman 66, to me, that could work.
Let me counter that though. My number one all time top 10 film of all time forever and always will always be Buckaroo Banzai Adventures Across the Eighth Dimension. I adore that film. Mm-hmm. I don't want to see any more. It was perfect. It is a moment in time like the Batman 66.
Oh, sure.
It perfectly encapsulated what it was. And for me, anything that comes after just diminishes its light.
Well, there are obviously some things that just tell a complete story and never need to be done again. DC, are you listening to me? 12 issues of Watchmen was all anybody ever needed. But Batman 66 was not a complete saga. You know, if they want to add more to that, I'm fine with it.
Yeah, but that's like the Wonder Woman 70, whatever it is. You know, it's like we didn't need more. I understand you guys like it. That's cool. I'll capitulate the point on this one and not argue it too hard. But for me, I want new stuff. I'm tired of member berries. I want more new ideas.
I'm totally with you on new stuff. But if we have, but
I think that's why I like Court of Owls. Yeah.
But if we got to revisit something, you know, go back and revisit something that hasn't already been done to death.
All right, Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends. Let's bring that back.
Well, listen, anything that gets kids interested in superheroes and teaches them some positive values and gets them to read comics and geeky stuff, God bless them. If it's Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends or The Punisher and His Amazing Friends, whatever it is that hooks them, you know.
I'm sorry, I must again point out that they have brought Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends back. One page in Spider-Verse where you see them dead underneath an energy vampire. They came back. They got their beautiful, respectful resurgence that you guys have all been looking for.
Talking about bringing young readers in, one of my nephews loves Batman and one of my nephews loves Spider-Man. There's nothing for them to read. The Spidey, the all ages Spidey stuff that Marvel put out apparently has been cancelled.
Yeah,
I can't just pick up the Spider-Man book now and say, okay, they read that. I remember the last time I read Spider-Man, he was like raiding a crack den. It's like, yeah, this would be great for kids. Yeah. It just makes no sense.
Isn't it kind of depressing about how, therefore, with that brief, beautiful moment, Marvel had that Ultimates line with Ultimate Spider-Man with this young, continuity-free Spider-Man that everybody could relate to, and it ended up with, you know, the Blob cannibalizing the Wasp and Tony Stark and, you know, Scarlet Witch and Quicksilver incest.
Yep.
Talk about something going completely off the fucking rails.
Who was responsible for that? Jeff fucking Loeb. Who will, by the way, the last interview he gave, the interviewer felt compelled to point out that Jeff Loeb requested that he not ask any questions about Ultimates 2.
Wow.
Speaking of going off the rails, we are no longer talking about cartoons. We've been talking about comics for a while now.
We're not even talking about comics, though, when we're talking about Ultimates 2 also.
Other than to say that original Ultimate Universe would have made a great they could have done a great animated thing with that.
Well, listen, it was once again what Marvel's greatest fear has always been, which is I used to love, there was this great, when I used to be part, when I was in college, in a part of an app of that called Comicopia, for anybody who's listening who knows Comicopia, hey guys. And one of the writers used to do this series called Reasons Why Marvel Needs a Crisis. And this was in the 90s. And he would just go in, like, a lot of it was X-Men storylines, you know, like, well, here's a dangling thread Chris Claremont left that needs to be resolved and all this kind of stuff. But it was really true. And I always felt, yes, Marvel desperately needs a dramatic and complete reboot. And when Ultimate Comics came out, they had their chance, but they half-assed it. They didn't want to pull the trigger completely, right? They were too scared. DC, hit or miss, has the balls every time to go, fuck it, let's see what happens. And I appreciate that. Whether they make it or they don't, like, make it, and brought us to Rebirth.
So, yeah,
you know, they try. Oh, now, be nice.
I'm just being honest. But,
Hey, dude, let's give DC their props. It's been almost 50 days since they've done something stupid, which is kind of a good run for them.
Hey, when does anyone reboot Thundar?
Because it sucks. Oh, sorry.
Why? Yeah, easy.
Well, Thundar the Barbarian, you know, pretty much filled that niche that everyone was doing back in the day, where your fantasy was a post-apocalyptic Earth. That was pretty much the tried and true trope of the era.
So I always assumed Thundar was a prototype He-Man.
I was going to say, I really liked Thundar the first time I saw it, and it was called He-Man. It was really good.
Yeah. We never got Thundar. Yeah. We got He-Man. We never got never see Thundar. Yeah,
so. Whatever. Except Thundar had, like, a hot chick who, like, rode a horse without a saddle and, like, a big Chewbacca buddy roaming around the post-apocalypse.
Yeah.
He would shank He-Man in about 30 seconds.
And he had a lightsaber.
Wow. Well,
exactly. He would just leave him dead, and the acid rain would just strip the flesh off He-Man's bones.
Hey, you know what you guys should watch? Son of Zorn.
You know what? It's not bad.
I totally disagree with you. I could not stand that show.
Wow.
Really? Well,
it's an acquired taste.
I tried watching it, and I couldn't get into it.
Any listeners who haven't seen it, it's what's his name? Arnell from Development.
Not Dave Arnell. Jennifer Aniston movies. Will Arnett.
Yeah, Will Arnett. He was the magician in Arrested Development.
Yeah.
And basically, he plays a He-Man analog who comes back to California to bond with the kid he fathered 10 years ago. And, you know, it's wacky family sitcoms with a side serving of just batshit He-Man stuff going on.
Yeah, it's kind of funny. For me, the best superhero cartoon on the air right now is Steven Universe. That is the best superhero cartoon.
Oh, that's a great show.
All right, so what the hell is it? I keep hearing it mentioned, and I have no idea what the hell it is.
Watch it. Just watch it. I'm telling you right now. It's called Steven Universe. It's written for kids a little bit, but it's got some adult messages in it. But the thing that they're doing is they're doing what Marvel's failing at right now, which is introducing the concepts of, you know, social justice, diversity, progressive values, but they're not beating you over the head with it or telling you you're bad. So, for example, his father, even though his father just works at a car wash, he's not a deadbeat. He's not a loser. He's there. He's a part of his life, even though Steven's being raised by these gem women. And it's really well done. The message is super positive. The world building is amazing. Stuff that you just think is throwaway comes back in, like, later episodes and really has impact. It's very, very good.
That sounds awesome. Good.
Yeah, again, it follows a very short format. Every episode is only like 10 to 15 minutes long. Yeah. But the fact is, yeah, it was really confusing to watch at first. But as you watch more of it, they tell you more about the world. You find out there was an alien invasion a while ago, and that's what the superheroes are all about, and finding out how Steven came to be is just amazing history.
It's a hugely drawn out heroic arc that is just amazing to watch and so well done. And good for kids, good for adults. You can literally sit, Walt, you could sit your nieces and nephews down and you could sit with them and both of you are getting something out of it. And a lot of the time you're going to get the same thing out of it, which is the cool part.
Yeah. So everybody brace yourself for next year's Grim and Gritty reboot for the live action.
This just in, Disney has purchased Steven Universe and Brian Michael Bendis will be doing a series on it.
And Steven Universe
signed Zack Snyder to do the movie adaptation.
And he won't kill Batman because both their moms are named Martha, right?
Back on superhero movies. Hang on, back on superhero animated movies. The Suicide Squad animated film. What the hell was that thing called?
Attack on Arkham.
Attack on Arkham. That should have been the Suicide Squad movie.
I agree.
It was so good. You haven't seen it?
Find this.
It's actually called Batman Attack on Arkham. It's not listed as a Suicide Squad movie. It's listed as a Batman movie.
Yeah, but he's only in it for a little bit.
It's one of the New 52 animated films that they came out with shortly after they did the Flashpoint.
Yeah, right after it was the one right after Flashpoint, wasn't it?
Was it after Flashpoint or after Throne of Atlantis?
It was after Throne of Atlantis. That's right.
Yeah, Throne of Atlantis. Okay,
it's really good, like really good. Surprisingly,
I guess maybe we should. We should, since we're talking about Hanna-Barbera, or at least we were for a second. what were we going to say? I have heard this rumor that the best, most clever comic book on the stands right now is the Flintstones reboot. No shit. Hand to God, I'm hearing this. I haven't read it.
Well, I tell you, I'll say this much about it. I haven't read it, but I read an issue synopsis that I think is kind of like the perfect Rorschach test about whether or not it's going to be for you or not. Because apparently one issue is about Fred and Wilma being ostracized because they won't go into the communal sex cave. And they want to buck society and explore a monogamous relationship. Now, if you think that's witty and clever, you should probably just buy all those.
But if
you're the type that just could live a million years without ever thinking about Fred and Wilma in a communal sex cave, probably best just to stick with the reruns.
Well, you know, I've never thought about that before, but now that you've planted that seed in my garden, I
didn't know it was written by Alan Moore. That's an interesting.
if they're having butt sex in the communal sex cave, yes, that'll be a ghost for Alan Moore project. Yes.
So, I guess while we're talking about butt sex, I got nothing. Sorry. Moving right along. Hey. Cartoon Action Hour for Spectrum Studios. It's a great RPG for emulating animated action. How was that for getting away from that subject?
That's well done, sir. Well done,
sir. Can you emulate butt sex in the communal sex cave? That's what I want to know.
No, that game's called Fatal.
Oh, right.
Oh,
in a bar? What? No? Okay.
So Cartoon Action Hour is broken up. Cartoon Action Hour is broken up into several different books to emulate several different like generations of cartoons, right?
Yeah, yeah. There's a G.I. Joe analog. There's a Transformers analog. There's superhero stuff. There's a
He-Man analog.
Season 3 was, specifically tailored towards 80s cartoon, which gives, you know, He-Man, Marshall, Bravestar, all kinds of stuff like that. Hmm.
And so, if you need all that stuff in the same place, you can read IDW right now.
Yeah.
True story.
They have rebooted ROM, and I read it for about 5 issues because I got ROM when I was like 6 years old and thought it was the greatest thing. And
right,
ROM the Space Knight.
ROM the Space Knight. They rebooted them, and it's not bad. It's just like bog standard. I mean, you know what's going to happen five pages before it happens. So I just kind of had to press the eject button because I was getting bored. But
what stuff came over from Marvel that wasn't considered Marvel's property in that? Because ROM did explore a lot of the Marvel space universe, you know?
Mm-hmm. There's a guy named ROM. He's leader of the Soul Star Armada. He fights dire wraiths. That's it.
That's it? That's all, right?
Huh? Yeah. That's all that Marvel... I mean, Marvel created a whole universe around him, but that's all they got that they could use, so...
Huh.
So yeah, anyway, and they got a weird crossover. I need to read at some point when I'm sick and have a lot of spare time. But it's a crossover between G.I. Joe, Transformers, and ROM.
It's not, yeah, but the thing and, is, it's not a crossover. It's an established universe thing going on now. That is it. That is,
well, yeah,
ROM is now part of the Transformers and G.I. Joe universe.
Yeah, yeah, it's
and Micronauts. Yeah. And Mask.
Yeah, Mask.
Oh, and Gem and the holograms are going to show up later.
Yeah, it's like the great big multi-book event, like Final Crisis.
The Mattelverse or something?
All the thrills of an 80s preteen just randomly pulling crap out of his toy box.
Isn't that what they're trying to do with the Transformers movies? Aren't they trying to make Transformers movies part of a Mattel on
they're going to have a shared universe with the...
That's what I heard. Yeah.
By the way, anytime you say Transformers movies is an inherent sneer quote.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. I think anyone mentions Transformers movie to me, it's just the animated movie. Anything after that never existed.
Thank you.
So that's all good.
That's how I am with Die Hard. There was never a sequel, but the rest of you have these delusions about a Die Hard franchise that doesn't really exist. There was one really good movie, and I don't know why they didn't make any real follow-ups to it, but man, that
was my favorite Christmas film. What can I say?
Yeah.
Oh, has anybody seen Split yet?
That is the backdoor sequel to Unbreakable, right?
Yeah, man.
It's supposed to be, yeah.
Yeah, man.
Spoilers. Sorry about that.
Eh, yeah, whatever.
I haven't seen it.
No one's going to see it. It's an M. Night Shyamalan film. People don't see those anymore. But, man.
In fairness, people got burned more than once.
But wait. Split is a sequel to Unbreakable?
Spoilers for anybody who doesn't hear this. At the end of the movie, after the whole thing goes through with the multiple personality guy and all that type of stuff, some people are reading about it in the newspapers, and they're talking about it in a cafe, and Bruce Willis is there in his security guy thing and makes some comment, and it's like, yeah, I know, this is the backdoor sequel to Unbreakable.
So they did a Marvel-style stinger at the end of a goddamn M. Night Shyamalan movie?
Yep.
Yeah.
And
What a twist!
Am I having a stroke? Did someone really just say that?
Well, given that Unbreakable is my all-time number one favorite superhero film, I'm happy.
No, I love Unbreakable, but then M. Night Shyamalan, like, it was a fit of hysterical strength, and he used up all of his creativity on that movie, and so...
Well, I think what it was is the reaction to it was so poor from the audience, from the public, that he made sure everything he did afterwards was just insane, batshit, crazy stuff. Whereas if people had actually liked Unbreakable, we might have gotten more of that kind of filmmaking out of him, I think.
Well, I guess that's possible. Oh, hey, you know what? Episode 2 of It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia this season is a backdoor sequel to Quantum Leap.
What?
It's a musical backdoor sequel to Quantum Leap.
Is Scott Bakula in it?
Yes.
Oh,
he
dear
is.
Lord.
And he sings.
Oh, dear Lord.
Okay. All right. On a completely unrelated note, I just have to throw in just so that I can get this out of my skull. Otherwise, it's going to blow up. Okay. When we're talking about TV shows and movies that are kind of backdoor sequels and then shared universes or something, okay, I found out recently that Quincy, the classic Jack Klugman sort of precursor to CSI and all that, it exists in the same universe as BJ and the Bear.
Well, there
you
go. You
know what that is? Because it's in the same universe as St. Elsewhere. And the last episode was that kid with the snow globe.
Oh, yeah.
The autistic kid. So that's in the same universe as like Magnum P.I. and
MASH.
Yeah.
And MASH.
Magnum P.I. is in the same universe as Murder, She Wrote, because they did the crossover episodes.
Yeah.
One Murder, She Wrote episode, one Magnum.
X-Files and Picket Fences were in the same universe, too.
And just also, Mad About You, Friends, and Seinfeld were all in the same universe.
Nope, Seinfeld wasn't. Seinfeld wasn't. The night they did, they did the blackout episode where all the other episodes on NBC that night did a story about the city having a blackout, and Seinfeld refused to play ball and said, we are our own story, our own universe, and basically broke the thing.
Okay, but Kramer was in Mad About You.
Yeah, but that's just your average crazy New Yorker.
Kramer owns Seinfeld's original apartment.
Isn't it good to know you can have a nerd fight without ever bringing up comics?
Yeah, I love Seinfeld. I'm a massive Seinfeld fan. So if you're really Seinfeld related, it's just like,
I'm just enjoying the backwards universe thing that Aide has actually seen all this stuff. And he
doesn't Yeah, well, we just saw it last week. Bizarro universe Aide here, right?
It's Bizarro Aide. This is me.
Yeah, Sky One just got all those shows last week, so that's why Aide's all talking about it right now.
I own Seinfeld on DVD.
Yeah, in the UK, you guys have to do the box sets, right?
What Seinfeld's or just generally?
Just in general, yeah.
Yeah, pretty much. They we get stuff. Sky Atlantic is the thing is. There's one channel which buys a lot of American stuff in, and the only way you can get it is via one TV provider. So anything that's particularly any good, such as Game of Thrones, is only on that one channel. Until you wait until a year later when they release the DVDs or Blu-rays, then you can see Game of Thrones on DVD. So if you haven't got that channel, you're stuck.
Speaking of British TV, I'm hearing Jack Black's the next Doctor Who. What's up with that?
I do you know what? I don't know who's going to be the next Doctor Who. I'm cautious.
Can I vote for someone to be the next Doctor Who? Nobody. Put it in its grave.
Do you know what? Funny enough, I was actually thinking that. I would say, apart from the fact that they've got a guy lined up to take over the show, I would say, rest it.
It's done.
But I mean, I love Who, but I mean,
The ratings. The ratings are still good. Who pulls a TV show off the air while people are still watching it?
That's the problem.
Fox does that. The ratings, in the 90s and early 2000s.
Cartoon Network does that.
Yeah, there we go.
The ratings for Capaldi's episodes apparently weren't very good because people didn't understand the complex plots. It's like, what did you want them to do? It's like, well, the worst thing about it, the BBC is that they can't understand that certain shows should be for certain demographics, certain audiences. Rather than say, oh, it's Doctor Who, everyone must like it, why can't we just have a show that's for sci-fi people? Why does it have to have the person who likes Great British Bake Off watching Doctor Who as well? It's not essential. So the idea that you put time travel in the time travel show is kind of the point of it.
So I want to see Great British Bake Off with time travel. That's what I want
to
see now.
Well, that's gone to another channel now, so that won't happen. BBC have lost that. But yeah, no, I don't get it. But there's people I would like to see as Doctor Who. Patterson Joseph was a guy who was put up last time. He would look really, really good. Apparently they named the guy who plays Q from the Bond films a lot. Him, I don't know who he is, but apparently they put him up as a potential.
Can I venture something?
The young Q, yeah.
Yeah, he's good. But I can venture something for you right now. If they just got David Tennant to sit in front of a TV going, beautiful, and dingling keys for 45 minutes to have the best ratings ever.
Tennant coming back would set the show.
Tennant's going to be the new Scrooge McDuck on DuckTales.
He's going to be Scrooge McDuck, yes. Yes, he is.
So good as the Purple Man.
Trying to get us back to talking about cartoons.
Back to cartoons.
There was a Doctor Who animated series.
Stretching.
It's true.
So if you look at Scrooge McDuck, what about cartoons like the Animaniacs, which were just
greatest cartoon ever made.
That was the last of a great era of Warner Brothers cartoons.
Oh my god! Like the song about the states and the elements.
No. Every word in the English language as a song. The countries of the world as a song. Or Lake Titicaca, one of my favorites ever.
Poor Magellan.
Okay, so Freakazoid as well. Remember that?
Yep,
that's vaguely superhero like. That was a good show as well.
Oh, that was wonderful.
Yeah, Freakazoid was very good. I actually miss Darkwing Duck.
That was cool.
I love
Darkwing Duck was so good.
That was a lot of fun.
And the tick. Oh god.
Oh, the tick animated. Yeah, that was good as well.
Yeah, the live action tick is coming back.
Yep, on Amazon.
On Amazon, yeah. Although it's a little darker, they're kind of playing like Tick is the imaginary friend of Arthur.
If only we could get Patrick Warburton to reprise the role.
No, the guy they got, because I saw the pilot, the one that they did up for the voting to see which series people wanted to develop, and Tick won and got development. The guy they got was really good, actually. I was like, well, he was like perfectly between Warburton and the cartoon. He hit that middle spot really well, I found.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Hey, there are a lot of DC animated movies. And some of them are good and some are not so good. Do you guys have, favorites or... Like, I heard the Flashpoint movie was pretty bad. Does anyone have an opinion on that one?
It was atrocious.
It was pretty bad, but it kind of set up the new 52 universe that came afterwards. I haven't been a huge fan of like the Justice League stories they've been doing. Like, Justice League War wasn't great. And
Doom wasn't great.
Throne of Atlantis wasn't great, but the the Batman animated films have been pretty good. Like we were talking about the Suicide Squad and the ones with Damian Wayne and the most recent one, the Teen Titans versus Justice League. That was pretty decent. So I've been getting more and more impressed with them, which is why I'm really looking forward to Justice League Dark and the Judas Contract.
Well, for me, there's only one DC animated film in recent memory that really fails on every level. It was just a complete waste of time, and I'm really I regret that I'll never get that time back in my life. And obviously, you all agree with me. It was Under the Red Hood. It was just so bad.
I'm sorry. Am I being trolled right now? Is that the thing that's happening like live on the air?
Funny enough,
I actually thought you were going to say The Killing Joke.
Oh, it was horrible. Oh, it was terrible. It was
I have it. I have The Killing Joke, and the only part of The Killing Joke I've watched so far is the first 40 minutes, which is all the Barbara Gordon stuff, because I know what's going to happen for the rest of it. So I just haven't had the energy to go back and watch it. Whereas, like, the Justice League versus Titans, I don't know where that came from. So that's new. So I watched it all the way through happily. Brilliant. So I tend to like these ones that tend to be drawn from original stories rather than redos of comic stuff that you don't know. Which again is the part of the problem with the live action movies. Hey, let's do the Spider-Man thing again. We've seen that before. Oh yeah, that's yeah. So that's that's me.
Hold on, I'm going to spoil the Amazing Spider-Man for you guys. He gets bitten by a spider.
What?
Radical! He gets these powers from the spider.
How like dare
a spider has.
Does his uncle live? That's all I care about. Make sure his
that's
uncle
right,
lives.
Yeah.
No, his uncle gets smoked, man. It's real depressing. It gives him this moral purpose going forward. It's fucking deep, man.
Well, you obviously haven't read the new Alan Moore version of the script. I'll just give you a hint. It involves a spider that's looking for some action.
It's a spider god thing.
Look, all of Alan Moore's
butts.
Current
with a thing for butts
are written by the elves that live in his beard. Okay, we all know this.
So I just want people to start looking up a song by Mikey Mason called "Me and Alan Moore's Beard."
You know, Green Lantern: Emerald Knights in 2011 has Nathan Fillion playing Hal Jordan.
Yeah,
it's worth seeing.
I like that. That was a good one.
It was okay.
Although the original Green Lantern animated had Christopher Maloney, the guy that was on Law and Order.
Yep, and is one of the funniest actors you'll ever see when they let him do comedy. He is hilarious, that guy, man. He was in, what was that stupid movie he was in where he plays the redneck hillbilly? It was one of the Harold and Kumar films, and he's hilarious. It's like, this is a guy who's like, every time you see him, he looks like he's a psychopath, and here he is just having a great time, you know? So it's kind of fun.
Oh, you know, we should probably mention Big Hero 6, which is too.
That was
a fun movie.
That was a good film.
Based on a Marvel comic no one knows about, apparently, and The Incredibles, which they're also doing a sequel to.
Yeah. Incredibles is fantastic.
About time for an Incredible sequel.
Yeah, we've got three Cars movies, but we haven't had an Incredibles movie.
Yeah.
I'd rather have an Incredibles series, to be quite honest. I'd rather them do a TV series. It'd be more fun.
Well, I think that was on Brad Bird, right? I think Pixar would have been happy to do another Incredibles movie, but Brad Bird obviously had to fulfill a deep artistic purpose and make a movie that we all agree was worthy of his time, named John Carter, right?
I liked that movie. Step Back. It was a good
movie. I like John Carter as well.
It was a good movie. Well, you don't like movies, Aid. Stop talking.
I love John Carter, so I'm allowed to at least like John Carter.
If we're gonna talk about John Carter, I gotta get a recognition from my good friend Tony Cranfield, who was one of the animators on that movie. So Tony, we appreciate what you did, sir.
I gotta throw in a shout out to Ariel Madel, who did some work on Heroic Force, came through in a big way, who was on the comic book recently and was on Xena as well.
Okay,
nice. Cool.
Yeah, John Carter's one of those characters you thought would really connect with people, but I don't know if it's just bad.
Here's the thing, I actually like John Carter too. However, if you had said to me that he could have not done that movie and done another Incredibles movie already, I would have preferred another Incredibles. So there you go. John Carter is an opportunity cost thing. It's like, why are you doing anything? And then he did a Mission Impossible movie, and I'm just sitting here going, what are you doing?
He also did Cars 2, which you know, we would all be better off. Oh.
The man made a movie with Samuel L. Jackson playing a character named Frozone and didn't make a sequel to it. What is he doing with his life?
Well, I mean, okay, if it takes him a little time to come up with something equal to that, I can cut him some slack, you know.
It's called Guardians of the Galaxy.
Oh, good one.
Hey, how was that cartoon? Has anyone seen that cartoon?
It's terrible. It's just like it's just like the Avengers cartoon that's currently come out, which honestly I equate to a group of junior high school students got a hold of the character sheets of the Avengers, and this is how they're playing them.
Yep. The only good story arc they did was the Squadron Supreme. Their Squadron Supreme story arc was really well done.
I have to say that the Squadron Supreme story was excellent, but other than that, it has been a
shit pile show. Of dumb. Complete really? Shit show.
So I'm not missing anything, that's also to go with Hulk and the Agents of Smash, isn't it? I mean, I mean
absolutely terrible.
What about Mastermind? Everybody lost their shit over Despicable Me, but Mastermind came out at the same time, and I thought it was the superior supervillain.
Mastermind was way superior to Despicable Me. I love Mastermind.
Yeah, I like Mastermind. Yeah.
The only difference was Mastermind didn't have the minions.
I was going to say, Mastermind didn't have a $1 billion market opportunity.
Yeah. I'm not sure how minions cut out. I'm really not, but I got.
Yeah. Just like George Lucas sitting on his big old pile of Ewok movie, listening to all of us talking about how he wrecked the third movie. Yeah, my heart's breaking.
Sorry, to get off track on that a little bit, that you bring it up. I watched a fantastic YouTube video recently where a guy who is a cinemaphile sat down and basically went over the prequels and said, literally, you guys, we've all have no idea what a fucking auteur George Lucas is. And he started showing certain composition of frame, moments, choices, things like that. Holy shit.
Oh, they're beautiful movies.
They're layered, man.
They're absolutely beautiful movies. I just don't care for the story.
Also, Hayden
Christensen. Yeah, but I don't care for anything Star Wars.
Hayden Christensen could not act his way out of a fucking wet paper bag. And
yeah, but he hates sand, man. It gets everywhere. Come on.
It's harsh.
I'm not a big Star Wars fan. I do like Rebels, though.
Rebels,
yes.
I'm looking forward to Rebels. I'm still working my way through Clone Wars, so I have to go.
Clone Wars is good.
Actually, you will be glad you have finished Clone Wars. There is a lot of callback to Clone Wars in Rebels.
That's what I thought, because I knew Rebels was the same people, and I knew Ahsoka was in Rebels. So yeah, I figure I have to finish it. So
anyone else a Rick and Morty fan?
Yes.
Rick and Morty is awesome.
Can't wait for season 3.
Oh, yes.
When the hell is it coming out?
March, they're saying now.
Yeah, he's really taking his time, but considering the level of storytelling Rick and Morty has been doing, I don't blame him. Please take your time for quality. I will wait for quality.
It's like Venture Brothers.
Exactly.
I'm happy to have those gaps in time between, because every season Venture Brothers delivers for me.
Yes.
I really wish someone would do a Venture Brothers board or card or RPG game.
Card game would be awesome.
There's so much going on there. I'd like to know.
Oh my God, that's brilliant. Mike, wow.
Hey, Mike.
Who's the Green Ronin guy? There's a Green Ronin guy in here. Who is it?
I work off and on for them.
Cool.
Okay, someone get the license. Yeah, someone get the license. I will totally draw for that.
I will playtest the shit out of it.
My prices are reasonable.
My playtest price is free.
I'm only guessing, but surely there's been a Munchkin version, right? Because hasn't every single intellectual property been turned into a Munchkin game at this point?
I don't know.
I don't think they have for that one.
I'm still waiting on Munchkin Glengarry Glen Ross.
that would be a good one. I play the Coffee is for Closers card.
Oh, yeah? Well, I play second prize is a set of steak knives.
Third prize is you're fired.
Oh, you got me.
I kind of want to play this game now.
It writes itself.
There's not much Venture Brothers merchandise. They don't even have t-shirts and action figures.
They have next to nothing, really.
They were going to make a movie a few years ago, but the guys couldn't get the script done in time. So they just did a direct-to-video movie instead of a theatrical release when they finally finished a few years later. So, but yeah, it's a really fascinating universe. I'm not sure if they have a fan base. Oh, speaking of good superhero things, they don't have much of a fan base. Supermansion.
The what?
Supermansion. No one's heard of it. It's getting a second season. It's by the guys who did Robot Chicken, so it's claymation.
Huh. Have to look this up.
I'm looking it up right now.
Bad fame. It's yeah, it's Bryan Cranston, Seth Green, people I haven't heard of, but it's it's basically the guys from Robot Chicken do a superhero show. So if you like Robot Chicken, that kind of crude humor.
Okay, guys. Bryan Cranston voices the main character whose name is Titanium Rex.
Great.
The League of Freedom, Titanium Rex, Black Saturn, American Ranger, Jubot.
He is part of it.
Brad and Cooch. I'm in.
Yeah,
he's I'm sorry, Superman. Did you say Jubot?
Jubot. Yep.
An introspective and soft-spoken robot man initially called Robobot, he renames himself Jubot after discovering his creator was Jewish and after befriending a rabbi who gives him a hat.
Yeah, it's a fun show. He's going through that same thing they have all the robotic characters go through. You know, am I really human? What am I? And he finds out his mother was Jewish. And if your mother is Jewish, you can be ethnically Jewish. So he goes with it. So
nice.
Yeah, it's fun. You should check it out. And I got nothing else to say about that. So yeah, I'm watching the first season right now on my daily commute. So
yeah, I'm looking at this list of voice actors. Bryan Cranston, Keegan-Michael Key. You've got some top talent here.
Bryan Cranston is like Superman, except instead of coming from an alternate timeline, like the guy in Astro City, or from another planet, he comes from under the Earth. He's a Mole Man Superman.
Oh, nice. Well, that's on my watch list.
Yeah, we should get that license too. Although there's all these licenses I would like to get, but I don't know if there's any fans that would, you know.
You know what's funny? There's only one license I want, and it's the weirdest. When I say it, you're all going to maybe make a crooked eyebrow at me or go, yeah, that's an interesting idea. I want the Super Unicorn Crooks universe license. Remember that book that came out for M&M First Edition, Crooks?
Yes.
I know who I'm talking to here. I'm just saying it out loud.
Yes.
I want that license. I want that license badly. Those characters belong.
They
belong in the Zenith universe. That's all I'm saying.
A good many of those guys went off to Paizo and could probably, you know, buy and sell all of us. So, I mean,
yes, true. That's true.
They probably cut you a deal because they certainly don't need to stick anybody up for the rights.
Yeah, it's figuring out who owns them.
There were some cool characters, but then they just kind of disappeared after First Dead. You never saw them again.
Well, they didn't. No, there was a second edition update that Darren Bulmer did the stats on, if I recall correctly. And then that was it. It just died off. But it was the best stuff I ever saw for M&M. It was what I really like. When I saw that, I was like, I want more of this.
No! Oh, excuse me. I've got to go take the lance out of my heart here.
Poor you. I'm so sorry. Emerald City was good.
Well, thank you. I'm good to know that I did something at least slightly better than Crooks.
Well, listen. I lived in the West Coast for 8 years in Vancouver. So for me, Emerald City reminded me a lot of Vancouver, even though it's Seattle, really. They're very similar areas, so it was kind of fun. It made me feel nostalgic.
Well, thank you. I've always said it's the best book about the Pacific Northwest written by an Australian, a Southerner, and a New Englander.
Well, that's who you find living in the Pacific Northwest, don't you know?
Yeah, personally, I'm finding it hard to write the world book for my superpowered Legends universe because I cannot compete with the quality of Emerald City and the Atlas of Prime.
Wound healed. Oh, thank you. Yes. Wound healed. Thank you.
Wow, there's a cleric in this party. Look at that.
Funny.
Canadian Barbarian hits the blow.
Yeah.
Oh.
Well, I have a weird Emerald City thought we could finish up on if you like.
What's that? Okay. Go for it.
There is a character in Emerald City who is named after a friend of mine who was in my college role playing game, and I named a ex World War II era superhero after her. And one of the funniest things I ever did was I sent her links from our forum where people were role playing as her. And she turned it around and said, "Does this mean that I could go to a con and cosplay as myself?"
Wow! Yes.
And it was like the snake was eating its own tail. You know,
Ouroboros, baby.
we used to be the gamers and now we're the game.
Nice.
Thank you. Thank you.
Crazy. So on that note, with about 3 minutes left, parting thoughts.
I would like to be on again for the next time we talk about cartoons.
We can do that. And I've been talking
About cartoons.
Well, I think we're all going to go see Batman, the Lego movie. Thank you, Warner Brothers, for this $5. And
oh, yeah.
Eh.
I'll teach you guys a little French. Anybody here speak French other than me?
Oui.
There's a beautiful French expression. It's one of my favorite of all time. Is je m'en fous, which pretty means I don't give a fuck. So je m'en fous, Lego Batman. Je m'en fous.
Well, if you had a three-year-old in your house, maybe you'd feel differently.
I don't, so it works out wonderfully. At least as far as the police know.
Well, you know, Andrew, once civilization collapses here in the lower 48, you know, maybe I can come crash on your sofa and you can experience the joys of having a toddler in your house. Because I think we're only 2 weeks away from that, last I heard. So,
you know. Yeah, I'm childless. I'm childless myself. I had a friend of mine say, "Oh, well, I gotta interrupt our conversation for a second. I gotta go feed my toddler." And I was just like, "Is there a trough involved? I know nothing about this."
Not usually, but sometimes.
Just that super soaker loaded with pablum used at distance, right?
The other day at daycare, I was dropping him off. I looked at the teacher and said, "That goddamn fucking truck cut us off on the way in this morning." And I was like, "Oh, the things he hears from his mother."
And on that note,
you want to wrap it up?
Absolutely. You know, the next time we do animated, we can soak back into Thundar the Barbarian, and
I'll watch. Just so I have an opinion.
Read Sanfilippo, who did our random character generator in Supers, has been writing a series for Goodman Games called Under a Broken Moon, and he'd love to come back and talk about. I'd love to come back and talk about Thundar, so nice. That'd be awesome.
Yeah, that would be great. Cool. I feel like we're missing something somehow, but
that's what part two is for.
That's what part two is for. We've been at it for like an hour and a half, so we should wrap it up. So thanks to everybody for coming out. This was a good time. And thanks for our listeners for indulging us. And we'll catch you next time on the Banff Podcast.
Yeah. Peace,
love, Paisley.